Yo, Short Box Nation, this is Botter clocking in with a very quick announcement to make before we get on with the show. I'll be in Chicago attending C2E2, and if you'll be in Chicago attending the convention too, it means that you have a very unique opportunity to attend a live podcast show like never before. I'll be hosting a comic podcast crossover live show on Friday, April 26th. I'm going to be joined by very good friends of the show and frequent guest co-hosts like Chris Hacker from the Oblivion Bar podcast and Greg Ligtig from the First Issue Club. We're recording a live podcast show that's celebrating the best comics of the year so far. We're going to talk about the creators that are absolutely crushing it. And considering the people involved with the panel, you can expect a great time. You can expect the typical brand of comedy and entertainment. If you ever heard any of the other episodes where Chris and Greg have been guest co-hosts, you can expect that on steroids. So once again, if you're attending C2E2 this weekend and you're looking for something to do or you need a break from the convention floor and standing in lines, I highly encourage you to come sit in for this live podcast show taking place the Friday morning of the convention at 11:15 a.m. I'll have links to the room and the rest of the panel information in the show notes. So check that out if you'll be in Chicago. Come on out, sit in on the panel, and have a good time. Hopefully I get to meet you. With that being said, let's get this show started.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the Short Box Podcast.
The Short Box Podcast is recorded live in Jacksonville, Florida.
Yo, Short Box Nation, welcome back to the podcast. How's everyone doing today? All right, I hope the unanimous answer to that question is we're all in good spirits, because I sure am. If you're new to the show, welcome. This is the Short Box Podcast, the comic book talk show that brings you the best conversations about comic books and pop culture inspired by them. My name is Botter, and this is episode 391. I think it's safe to say the road to 400 begins now. I got to figure out something to do for 400. Yeah. I'm already stressing out about it. We decided this week would be a catch-up week to talk about and recap all the different kinds of comic book news, headlines, rumors, announcements, et cetera, that have transpired this month. And spoiler warning, to the surprise of no one, there is a lot to cover today.
We've got things to talk about.
So if you're looking for a specific talking point or topic, check the timestamps listed in this episode show notes. There will also be hyperlinks to the articles we'll talk about. There might be some visual references as well. And you heard me right. I did say we, because I got a small but mighty panel with me today. Joining me in the studio on mic number two is the return of a Short Box all-star. Let's go ahead and give it up for the especial Edmund Danzart.
What's up?
So nice to have you back.
I thought I was fired. I was like, oh, man. Well, it was a good run. I was expecting a severance package.
It was just a... look, no offense to you, man. It was just a good run of interviews that I had to take advantage of. I was a little worried that you forgot the address, so I was really happy to see you pull up in the car.
You locked me on all the accounts. I was like, man, that's weird. That's not a good sign.
False flag, not true. That's fake news right there. All right, and joining us via phone from another part of sunny Florida is a longtime friend of the show who honestly shares a lot of history with just about everyone involved in this podcast. And if I'm keeping it a buck with you, all right, if I'm being 100% real with you, this guy is a major influence and plays a big role into the inspiration for the start of the Short Box Podcast. He had one of the first comic book podcasts before I really even got into podcasts. All right. He was like the second comic podcast I knew behind Fat Man on Batman, which I think says a lot. And the career this man has had in comics is not only impressive, but insanely inspiring for a hometown kid like myself. He's owned a comic shop. He's run conventions. He was Art Germ's right-hand man at one point. And now he's in the big leagues. Ed. He's the retail sales coordinator at Boom Studios. Short Box Nation, let's welcome Greg Hopkins to the show. Man, it's so nice to have you again, brother. How you doing?
Thanks for having me on. Doing great. I listened to my first appearance this morning on the Short Box, episode 17.
17. Holy shit.
We were playing with the action figures. I was trying to think about it, but I was like, let me find that. It's cool to be back on. Thank you for inviting me.
I think you might be in the upper echelon of like returning guests and special guest co-hosts. I know we did an episode, me, you, and Drew did, I think it was a Patreon exclusive of before you ended up moving and going all Hollywood and mainstream on us.
I got lucky. It was luck.
Greg, real quick, is there a little lag? I think there might be a little lag between us, right?
It's West Florida, man. The internet's horrible over here.
Oh, so where are you at now? I don't even know.
Near Pensacola.
Pensacola, okay.
Kind of like pretty close to the Destin area. You know?
Okay, cool.
I know you've been with Boom Studios for a minute now, but I officially want to say congrats on the platform, on the short box. Congratulations. And in layman's terms, like, what do you do? What does a retail sales coordinator do?
So I work on the specialty side, where I work more with conventions and retailers to set up retailer exclusive covers, and then Fan Expo coming up with some of their Fan Expo Dallas, Something's Killing the Children, Pen and Ink covers they'll have debuting there. So more just specialty side of covers, and then showing out our previews each month on the video side and kind of doing like live presentations. So kind of everything within the sales realm of just making sure each month we're pushing the books we need to and hitting FOC numbers, and then working on creating new partnerships like with Whatnot and just conventions, Ranger Stop, anything like that.
God damn, that sounds like hyper important. That was like a lot of shit that you do, Greg. Congratulations, brother. And you foolishly agreed to be our industry expert insider correspondent for this episode as well. So you can put that on your resume as well, all right? Maybe towards the bottom. You'll be like, what the hell is Short Box Podcast?
Appreciate it.
And one last thing to do before we get this show off the ground. Let's say thanks to the people that help us keep the lights on. Like our incredible sponsor, Gotham City Limit, Jacksonville's premier location for comic books, collectibles, toys, and more. You'll hear more about them later on in the show, but do me a favor and check out their online store at GothamCityLimit.com. You'll find exclusive variants that no one else has and other killer deals on comics and merch. Once again, it's GothamCityLimit.com. And of course, none of what we do would be possible without the continued support of our Short Box patron saints, a.k.a. the Short Box family that makes up our Patreon community. We got big love for all of you. If you're someone that's been enjoying the show lately and want to support us in the best way possible, consider joining the Short Box fam over on patreon.com/theshortbox. Outside of feeling good about supporting an indie podcast, you'll also be treated to your very own private podcast feed. You'll get early access to all of our content before anyone else, and you'll get access to a bunch of bonus episodes that should keep you plenty entertained. If any of that sounds enticing to you, which I imagine probably does, please consider joining our Patreon community at patreon.com/theshortbox. You can sign up for a month, see if it's a good fit for you. If not, all good. We'd appreciate it. And thanks again to everyone supporting us already. We are now ready for liftoff. Let's get into the show. Let's get into these topics. Let's start off positive. You know, I'm looking at our list of topics, and it might get a little dicey, maybe a little heated, controversial, maybe. But let's start off with some good news. Let's celebrate some recent wins in comics.
Yeah, man.
Longtime listeners know that the Short Box is basically a Jim Lee Stan podcast. Mm-hmm. All right, that's what we moonlight as. So your headline is a good place to start. Kick it off.
So early May, DC announces that Jim Lee has got a promotion, or at least a new title, because I think he's been doing a lot of this stuff already. So he is officially the president of DC. He's heading all creative teams, and he is integrating publishing portfolios and basically merging them with all different media, so it's more unified with the animation, kind of like what James Gunn was saying when he took over. They kind of want to unify the movie division, the animation division, and the comics division to be more cohesively put together. He still answers to Pam Lifford, and hold on, this title. And she's the president of global brands, franchises, experiences at Warner Brothers Discovery. So that's a hell of a business card.
That sounds like Greg's entire resume right there in a title.
So just from history, Pam, watch out. Jim Lee's going to be in that chair soon.
Oh,
so,
come on, man.
So he's been at DC since, I believe, 1999. So he's been there close to 25 years.
He's got some tenure, man.
He's smart. As talented as an artist he is, he knew that there's a shelf life for that, right? So he navigated his way. He leaves Marvel when he has no beef like the other guys to start Image, creates his own company, essentially, his own lines, three or four different lines under Wildstorm, like Cliffhanger, ABC Comics. Basically goes to DC with all these IPs to offer, gets a position in DC, and just consistently moves up the ladder.
So he was like the CCO, Chief Creative Officer. Jeff Johns, see ya. I'm now that guy. He was co-publisher. co-publisher with Dan DiDio. I was like, nah, I don't want to. No, I'm not co-nothing. I'm Jim Lee.
Second victim. Get out of here.
Sole publisher. That's not enough. That's not enough for Jim. So he's moved up to president. And like I said, he survived all the cuts with all the turmoil that Warner Brothers and DC has been going through. Like basically different big corporations selling them and selling them off, selling them on, like cutting everybody. He has survived. He's the guy you want. Even if he doesn't sell you one more issue of comics, you want the guy with the cred. You know what I'm saying? You want the guy with close to 40 years in the industry. You want the guy that has drawn the best-selling comics of all time of X-Men 1. 7 million comics. Everyone loves this guy. You know, I joke, but I'm sure he's a great guy. Seems like a great guy.
And I've sat in on a couple of his streams, and you know, he's got thousands of people on there, and he reads comments, he'll answer questions. I've never gotten any like shady or like, you know, bad characteristics from him.
He never says anything very controversial. Clean. He's not like Uncle Todd who goes off. Even Uncle Rob and Uncle Todd who tend to run their mouth every once in a while to our entertainment, but he's very even keel. He's survived this industry. He's navigated his way. He can draw a comic right now, it'll sell a ton, and he still has the skills, and he's one of those guys who hasn't stayed stagnant. Like every time you see his art, it's like, man, he just keeps getting, when's it gonna stop getting better?
I've gotten to the point now where I'd rather see a Jim Lee book, where, because he started experimenting with like watercolor like during the pandemic when he was doing a lot of like live streams.
Oh yeah.
It almost feels like the more refined that his artwork gets, like when it gets to the inking stage and coloring stage, you lose some of that rawness. And I've thoroughly started to enjoy just his, like, you know, his sketches that are strictly him, where it's like him doing the inking, the watercolor.
It's just his hand. Just that. It's not an inker. There's not a colorist. It's you just see that raw talent that's been there. And it just, he seems to want to improve. For a guy who doesn't need to, he could just stop drawing 20 years ago and no one would say nothing, because he's, you know, running DC. He's the face of DC.
Yo, this is Botter. Sorry for interrupting this episode, but I'll keep it brief. I wanted to let you know about a massive sale we have going on over at the Short Box Store on all of our merchandise and apparel. That's theshortboxstore.bigcartel.com. You can now save 20% off your entire order using the discount code YO, YOO. So if you've been waiting for the right time to finally buy that gauntlet snapback, or if you ever wanted to buy any of the shirts you see me wear on the podcast, well, now's your chance to get them for a steal. We still have a few sizes left of everything, but they won't last long. And once they're gone, they are gone. And then I mentioned that all of our apparel is screen printed on high quality material. None of that heat transfer or direct to garment stuff. Our shirts are some of the most comfortable ones you'll ever wear, and the hats look even better in person. So wear your support for the Short Box Nation proudly, knowing that you're going to look damn good doing it. Get to theshortboxstore.bigcartel.com as soon as you can, and don't forget to use that discount code YO, YOO, to save 20% off your entire order. All of this information can be found in this episode's show notes if you want to get there faster. Thanks for not pressing fast forward. Now back to the show. Greg, as our industry insider, correspondent, special, super awesome guy, what do you think about this news, man? I know that you're a big Jim Lee fan, and as someone that's now in the industry yourself, is this inspiring to you?
Oh yeah, no. I mean, Jim Lee is the face of DC. Like, I'd argue maybe the face of comics. Like, took over for Stan Lee. He's not as you know, boisterous as Stan as far as like a cheerleader, but I mean, definitely, I think just with the legacy and can really like carry comics forward with the ideas he has and stuff like that. So it was awesome to see. And then, yeah, he had a Titans number one with the new Tom Taylor series cover for that recently. So, I mean, gorgeous cover, like still has it. And I heard this was a long time coming too. Like, some of this was done back like when Warner Brothers had the cuts earlier in the year, and they're just kind of announcing more of it now. But the structure has been happening and stuff like that. So I think there's probably more news coming out in like the next few months.
Yeah, plus he's still good looking dude for all these years.
Oh yes.
That's those Asian jeans, bro.
They don't crack, man. They don't crack. Jim Lee to me has always been like, I've always compared him to like the Jay-Z of like comics. Jay-Z being someone that earned a lot of credibility in the streets
and rap. You know, an entrepreneur from the get-go, someone that started his own record label, sold millions of records, highly respected by, like, you know, commercial, you know, pop, radio, also underground rap. Like, there's no one that doubts his, like, ability in rapping. So whenever he transitions to, you know, running for president of Def Jam, it was like, oh, that makes sense. Like, he's the guy. He's the guy. He's already proven himself. So this is like the next step. There's no way that he would have just continued making records and just being your rapper, even though he still does. Now he's on to bigger and better things. And I look at Jim Lee, and it's like a lot of similarities there where it's earned the credibility. He did the groundwork being a comic artist. And to mm-hmm. Ed's point, he's proven himself, right? Like, millions of comic books sold. Still holds, you know, a record, I think, right? Like, he still holds a record to this day.
Anyone that comes up to him, he just goes, 7 million, and just walks off. 7 million.
So now to watch him climb this corporate ladder, it's like, well yeah, there's no way that we could have contained him. Like, he's already done it all. Like, this is the next big step. You look back at his resume, it's like, yeah, this dude's been, like, business-focused and minded since he started.
Did I say 7 million? I'm sorry, 8.2 million. My bad. Sorry, Jim. My bad, Jim.
Yeah, you better watch out, Ed. All right.
8.2 million.
He come for you next, man.
Plus, you don't want to lose this guy, right? Like, Joe Quesada just got signed up by Amazon. A lot of these companies are taking these comic guys to basically develop new IPs for shows. Whether they print a comic or not, they want to kind of basically set up like this farm system for our IPs for content. So you don't want to lose this guy, too. You know, that's a big, if you lose this guy, what does that say? Like, big business wise, what does that say to, like, the stockholders and stuff like that? If we want to go that direction, you had this guy for 20 something years, legend, couldn't lock him up. You lose a lot of faith.
And I think we'll probably all agree that when New 52 came on board, I don't know if it was all single handedly, but he gets a lot of credit for designing and reimagining, like, the more contemporary suits that we're used mm-hmm. to, for, like, your Batman, your Superman, and your Wonder Woman, right? He is kind of like the house style now. Maybe not a lot of one-on-one direct interpretations, but I think his influence is still apparent. I think it's not crazy to make a connection artistically to Jim Lee's style. And I would say manga, too. I think manga's probably been a big influence on this newer crop of artists. But I think it's really safe to say a majority of the new artists at DC are Lee's children.
But you can argue that manga was an influence to those 90s guys, too.
Yeah, that's fair.
It wasn't as blatant, I guess, you know, more than others. You can even go back to, like, John Byrne and, like, Art Adams, and you can see, like, that manga influence.
That's so fair. But that's fair. But I think what I'm getting at is the comic books are basically, he developed, like, this new house style for DC that I think we're still seeing to this day ever since New 52. I guess I'm curious to see where he goes after this.
Yeah, and I'm curious to
see.
Will
his appetite for power ever be
never
fulfilled?
Pam, I'm telling you, start packing up that desk, Pam. Going to be curious to see now what is he going to do and what he has his actual hands on, and whether is he just a spokesman or is he going to be in the trenches with the creative teams, like they say. So it'll be interesting to see.
Big congrats to Mr. Lee.
Oh yeah,
big congrats. All right, it seems that every time we do these kind of these episodes and catch up and recap on comic news lately, Whatnot has been mentioned or connected in some way. And I'll take full blame on that. I feel like I'm always kind of bringing them up. Or I brought them up the last couple of Short Box News episodes. But today is also no different. This piece of news is about Whatnot Publishing's parent company, though, Massive Publishing. The headline comes from ICV2, who I think broke the news. The headline reads, exclusive, Massive announces 3 new imprints, flagship line launch title. Massive Publishing was founded, like, in 2022. I interviewed one of the founders of the company, Kevin Rotatelli, earlier this year in episode 87 or 377, one of those. And he had hinted at some big things that the company was, you know, working on, and I think this is it. So they're launching 2 new imprints. One is called Overlook, and the other one is called Kingwood Comics. I'll tell you a little more about those here in a second. And then they announced the first title in its new flagship line, which is a Sean Gordon Murphy 5-issue limited series called The Plot Holes. Me and Drew were literally talking about Sean Murphy, you know, being just doing strictly the Batman White Knight stuff, and how we both really want to see, like, we both were like, man, I really kind of want to see Sean Murphy get back to creator owned stuff. I think the comic gods heard me. And they're like, Botter, I got you. Wait until you hear this. So, 5-issue limited series called The Plot Holes. The solicitation sounds pretty cool. It's a story about fictional characters who move into other books to alter the plot. It was originally a Indiegogo crowdfunded project. Obviously, Sean Murphy, people wanted to fund that. He got almost $267,000 in pledges from over 3,000 backers. And this will actually be the first retail release of the series through Massive Publishing. I'm going to tell you right now, I co-sign anything that gives me more Sean Murphy, like, original comic goodness. Greg, I see you smiling over there because I know you're a big Sean Murphy fan. What do you think about this news so far?
I pulled it out. Like I did back the Indiegogo.
Holy shit.
The plot holes and such a good book. I mean, like, it's awesome to see this come in print.
Oh, shit.
And kind of get more of a mass thing at this point, because I think it is probably a little bit hard to get. So awesome news. And then for Whatnot too, or Massive at this point, to expand like that. I mean, we're seeing a lot of that in the market now, so it's pretty cool to see them taking on stuff like that. And Sean Murphy is such a solid base to start with that line. And then hopefully we do get a Murphy verse and stuff like that.
Greg, do you want my nerd card mailed to you, or do you just want me to drive to you and deliver it? Because that was a fucking mic drop right there. You already had the damn book?
Yeah, I pulled it when I saw it was on the thing. So
obviously, it's Sean Murphy. I know the art's going to be fantastic. I've always thought he's always had pretty interesting ideas for creator-owned stuff. Is it as good as his other stuff?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah, it's, I mean, story-wise, it's amazing. And then art, super detailed, beautiful. Like, he took his time. It came out a little late because of that, but it was well worth it. Such a good book.
So that'll be the first Massive Publishing's flagship title that they're going to kick things off with, a retail release of the Plot Hole series that was backed earlier. But back to the two new imprints that Massive Publishing also announced. So you got Overlook, which will focus on horror and will be helmed by writer Colin Bunn, who, you know, obviously is one of the hardest working guys.
Everything.
In comics, exactly. Hardest working guys in comics. That'll feature work by film and TV writers as well as comic creators, which I'm pretty excited about, right? Like, you're getting writers from different mediums that translate to comic books pretty well. And it's being, you know, run by Colin Bunn. I think that's, you'll be in safe hands.
I'm happy for him. He's like, man, I don't have to write 30 books a month now. I just do this sweet gig.
I feel like Colin Bunn purposely is like, nah, how many more? I can write 5. Nah, give me that.
And
title
run
too.
This label too.
Yeah. And the other imprint is Kingwood Comics, which will focus on Black creators and characters. It'll kick off in September. The first offerings from this imprint will be a retail distribution of Harriet Tubman, Demon Slayer by David Crownson. This is another crowdfunded property that is apparently also being adapted into a live action series on Disney Plus.
Disney Plus. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, granted, I don't know if that was Harriet Tubman, Demon Slayer, or two separate things. I got to double check that. But a Harriet Tubman Demon Slayer comic sounds pretty badass. Once again, that second imprint was Kingwood Comics, a focus on Black creators and characters. And the third part, you know, if that wasn't already like big news for Massive Publishing, they also entered a distribution agreement with Sumerian Comics, which was originally Behemoth Comics before Behemoth became the publishing arm of Sumerian Records. So with the help of Massive Publishing, Sumerian is going to be shifting towards more like licensed TV, film, and music properties, starting with their first comic will be A Bad Omens, Concrete Jungle Number 1. And if that wasn't enough, Massive is also joining the likes of Aftershock Comics, Titan Comics, Ablaze Publishing, and Frank Miller Presents as part of like Diamond Comic Distributors Deluxe tier of publishers, which means that they're going to get like preferred coverage in the previews catalog. So you'll probably see more of their titles and offerings.
They'll
in the
be
catalog.
Up at the front.
Yeah, exactly. You won't have to flip to where they're like in page like 400 now or something. And they'll also get like you'll probably see them also more on the Previews World website. So I wouldn't be surprised if good friend of the show, Troy Jeffrey Allen, is talking to more people at Massive and covering that as well. And they get like distribution perks. So I guess like that's the positive of being a part of like this upper echelon.
Yeah, and that's good for Diamond too, because how many people have left Diamond the last 2 years?
Shit, I think I was in the shop today and I forgot what publisher Ben mentioned, but they moved to like Lunar or something. And I'm drawing a blank here, but
I mean,
yeah.
You have like big indies, you know, like IDW, Dark Horse. And Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, at least in the U.S., Boom is not distributed by Diamond.
Yeah, fill us in, Greg. What's going on over there?
We are Diamond exclusive right now.
Really? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Everything's through Diamond.
Okay, yeah. Cool. My bad.
Greg, save all your shit talking for later, right?
Hey, cut this out. But like, you know, AWA, Vault,
you know, DC was that DC kind of started the whole exodus almost when they left. So you have like different vendors in the game, like Penguin, Simon and Schuster. So it's good to for Diamond to have like another new hot publisher in that list to kind of make up for all these other companies leaving. So that kind of, you know, improve things. You know, I haven't worked in a store in a while, but I know there's consistent, you know, issues with Diamond over the years. So, but it's good. It's good for both parties for sure. And like I said, they're killing it. They're whatever they're doing. Like they're doing those video game homage covers, variant covers. They're just killing the game. Like each title seems to sell more.
Greg, what do you think about it, man? What do you think about the growth of massive publishing in such a short time?
Oh no, I love it. It's definitely it's the opportunities that we're seeing are, I mean, around the industry in general too. You know, whether it be Dark Horse taking on the Snyder stuff, the imprint he had through Substack. We took on Sirens of the City at Boom from Cary Randolph, which published via Substack and is a digital comic we're printing for the first time. So yeah, it's cool to see Massive taking on those things because we are seeing more and more crowdfunded books these days that aren't traditionally published that maybe, you know, not all publishers can take on at once. But, you know, there's more creators than we've ever seen. And then exclusives have brought on more artists, you know, Alan Kwa, Kel New, people like them that have kind of gotten, I mean, Nate Zerte, you know, was, who we all know kind of, you know, was doing exclusives and then has led to what DC covers and stuff like that too. So I mean, everything is expanding. So it's definitely great to see some of these hits getting wider audience that maybe don't pay attention to crowdfunding, but maybe hit comic shops. So it's kind of a cool thing to see more of eyes getting on these things that maybe didn't get it before.
Well said. And is there any, I guess, risk for someone like a Sean Murphy going through with, like, you know, teaming up with Massive Publishing to do a retail release of this of Plot Holes? Like, I don't see any negative, right? It's like I've already gotten my money from the crowdfunding, and now you're telling me I can get like a piece of the pie from the retail
side? I'm guessing he'll get a percentage of sales, and his book will be distributed in more places.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a win for him. And plus he made the Indiegogo or Kickstarter money.
Mm-hmm.
They may pick up a part of the printing costs and stuff like that, but getting your book in more stores, that's huge. And a percentage of each book sold. Huge.
Big time. All right. It's been pretty positive news so far. Now we're about to enter the spicy territory. We got some spicy takes, quote unquote controversy that was kind of going on. I feel like this week in general was kind of interesting to be on comic Twitter. Ed, how about you lead us off, man? You got some news of some Frank Miller cover art controversy,
so,
right?
I believe it was this last week, but Twitter went crazy. Like, they showed these Frank Miller covers he's doing for Marvel, for especially the Ghost Riders Wolverine Weapons of Vengeance cover, and people are divisive. I'll say that. They're really divided on this. And it could be an age thing. So for someone who's lived through and read through prime Frank Miller to see like what his art has become, and it doesn't bother me as much as some people, I guess. He's close to 7 years old at this point. He's 66, I believe. It's one of those things where his impact has been so big on the industry, personal stuff aside. He's kind of went off the deep end a few times over the years. But like I said, he's been in the spotlight for so long. Does the impact that he's made in his career, does this affect his overall legacy as an artist? Is it, should he be even doing this? Does he need to put his stuff out there? He's kind of been drawing like this for, I would say, the last 10 years or so. This has kind of been his style, his like minimalist, really bizarre proportioned figures. It's not 86 Miller, you know what I'm saying? It's not going to be, those days are long gone. This guy's pushing 70. And like I said, for me, Miller, I don't ever consider him the best artist, but as far as the best storyteller, the best person to lay out a page, kind of, I guess, artist-writer combination, if you want to put those two together, but I don't put him in the category of like a top-tier artist. So this kind of bizarre version of his artwork now doesn't really bother me, you know, because I've seen a lot of older artists simplify their work to varying success. Does he get a pass?
Greg, do you want to take that first before I give my long-winded response?
So for me, I think you know what you're getting with Frank Miller to begin with. So anybody that maybe had a negative thing, and it is Twitter to begin with, so I think most things in there are negative anyway. You know what you're getting. Like, it wasn't like, I mean, if you're a Raphael Grandpa fan, you know what you're getting there, like kind of a blocky style. And comics have always had art that's not always streamlined, or, you know, it's not like we went from Frank Miller being like Jim Lee to what we saw there on the cover now. So it's not some drastic change in style. It's his style. It's just, it's evolved a little bit over time to what he's capable of now. I mean, it wasn't a horrible cover by any means. I thought it was, is nice, but I mean, going back to like Dark Knight Strikes Again and stuff like that, or Strikes Back, I mean, there are times where you can see Miller cares about the art and you get beautiful pages, and sometimes it's just he's drawing it to draw it, and that's kind of what you get. But I mean, that's part of his style too. And yeah, I mean, it's just a legend doing a cover, and if there's a Frank Miller fan, like, I think people should enjoy it. Not every cover's for everybody either.
Yeah, you have to take it for what it is, and it's a variant cover too, so you don't have to get it, you know. And it's funny, I saw some people put the FM, you know, his logo is the FM, and it's like, is that Frank Miller, or does it stand for fuck Marvel?
Like, you've purposely given bad covers to Marvel.
Yeah, he's like tanking it on purpose. It's like,
that's a hell of a long game. Right there. That's a hell of a long game.
66 year olds, I can finally tell him how I feel.
Yeah, that's like a scorched earth strategy, right?
Like
there.
Frank Miller never spoke his mind his career.
But he was like, I've been waiting for this moment to do variant covers for Marvel, and I'm giving them the shittiest covers. Not that I think they're shitty, for the record. Not to throw, you know, friends of the show underneath the bus, but they know who they are, and I think they would agree too. Some of this conversation that was happening online on Twitter might have started with someone that we've had on the show, Ed, Lex from the Wednesday Poll List podcast.
Okay.
On the 13th, May 13th, posted a tweet that said, it's time to let Frank Miller retire. Right, yeah, exactly. So. I mean, that is the Wednesday Poll List for you. They know how to go ahead and stir some shit, you know, get people talking. You know, they're good at that. And I don't think they ever mean it in like a negative
connotation. No, they just want a conversation.
Yeah, exactly. They just like kind of poking the bear. But he posted four of these Marvel variants by Frank Miller. One was a Fantastic Four, one was The Thing. There was a Blade one he did, a really badass Moon Knight cover,
cool,
that I liked a lot. And then obviously this Wolverine cover for this Ghost Rider Wolverine one shot. And I think his tweet, I saw it circulating among comic Twitter and people referencing it and talking about it. So congratulations to Wednesday Poll for having a very viral moment, or you know, kickstarting this conversation here. And I read a really good write-up on CBR by senior writer Brian Cronin, who basically, to save you a read, but it was a really good read, I do recommend it. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. He was talking about how the default for fandom and comic book art is realism. And he points to like people like Neil Adams, maybe one of the most premier names when you think of like realistic drawing and comic books. But then he goes on to talk about how a lot of artists that started out that way, that were influenced, whether influenced by Neil Adams or went the realistic route because it was the house style for, you know, these companies and the way to break in and the standard, and then eventually, you know, developed their own style. And he uses people like David Mazzucchelli as an example, right? You look at Daredevil Born Again, and the artwork in that is so very like realistic. You know, it follows the house style. You know, which you would kind of maybe come to expect from books at that time. And then you look at his later stuff, and David Mazzucchelli doesn't have a major, like a huge bibliography. I think it's like, really think it might be Born Again, and then his indie work on, help me out here, is it Astro Pop?
I know Mazzucchelli, he's kind of, I think he's went into the fine arts.
Well, he went into like the fine arts and the, and ended up like teaching too, in academia. Hold up, I kind of want to see what, okay, Astrios Pulp, something like that, okay. So, yeah, you look at David Mazzucchelli from Daredevil Born Again, and then his, you know, other, like, magnum opus. It was a creator-owned thing called Astrios Polyp. I think that's how you say it, Astrios Polyp. Those two styles are vastly different. They look nothing alike. And if you didn't know it was David Mazzucchelli, you'd probably think it was, like, a graphic designer or someone that works in, newspaper illustration, stuff like that. And then you also got people like Bill Sienkiewicz, right? Like,
oh, yeah. That's
his early
example.
Stuff. Hyper realistic, and now you've got
Electro Assassin is like 20 different styles,
dude. Yeah, right. So I say all that, we're just saying Frank Miller's, like, this is Frank Miller's style. It's nothing like what it was with like Dark Knight Returns, or, you know, even his own stuff in Daredevil. Like, this is his new style, and it might not be for everyone, but there's still the signs of like classic Miller, right? Like the attention to detail and like things like the hair, you know, the heavy shading and inking, you know, the very heavy lines that he draws.
Yeah, and I think he's kind of doing his kind of Kirby type stuff, where he's kind of simplifying things, yeah, and maybe trying to emulate that more or simplify his work more. But there's a certain charm to some of the stuff, like even from like DK2, where you see that kind of change to now. But you've seen this kind of change happening from Sin City up.
Yeah.
And that's 92, guys. That's a long time. I mean, so it's one thing for someone to just see this now. And like, if this was done by another artist, what would the reaction be? If this was some new artist, it's like, oh, that's weird. But Frank Miller has that history that is a curse too and a boon. Like, you know, he's going to be compared to his prime artwork. And he's never been Neil Adams. He's never been that guy. His impact, I think, is the way he lays out a page and the way he tells a story. Like I said, I don't think it's going to harm his legacy in the grand scheme of things. Like I said, I think more of his personal shenanigans might do that more than his artwork.
As well said. I agree. I really liked what you said, that we've kind of been watching him lean towards and refine this particular style. And I think this is where we're at with it, yeah. Right? Like, we've seen hints of it throughout his career, and I think this is where we're at.
And to be fair, he's not drawing a lot. It's not like he's trying to put a book out every month. He'll do the occasional cover like this, or maybe like a 2 or 3 page story. He'll still write, but...
And to your point, these are variant covers, right? Like, they're not in context to anything. They're not in context to a story or a previous panel.
Yeah, variant covers can be whatever. They can have characters that aren't even in the book or tangentially related.
I've always viewed him as like an auteur, right? Like someone that writes, draws, and, you know, just shy of like maybe inking or coloring. He pretty much does it all. And I think his style now is suited for his work. Yeah. So I think it's a little different now when you look at maybe like these characters that you're used to in a different house style currently. Like, he just doesn't follow any house style at the moment. Like, I don't think there's any house style or artist doing something like Frank Miller.
No.
And I think it still stands out. For better or worse, I guess, depending on your taste.
Yeah.
Speaking of topics that riled up the online comic community and had a lot of them seeing red this week, current Amazing Spider-Man writer Zeb Wells and the Marvel editorial team in general made a lot of enemies this week when Amazing Spider-Man number 26 leaked online, revealing the death of a major Marvel character. I wouldn't call it a PR crisis nightmare, but the reception and backlash to the leak online kind of forced Marvel to get ahead of the situation, and they actually ended up adding to the spoilers. I'm going to start off by giving some background and context so you get the bigger story. Maybe you haven't been following along with the current Amazing Spider-Man run and the reception, I'll say, to that series, so this might be helpful. So for the last couple of months, Marvel has been teasing that Amazing Spider-Man number 25 would be a pivotal issue, and that issue 26 would be, quote, a key turning point in Wells and Romita's run, one that will send shockwaves throughout the Marvel universe, end quote. And if you look at the cover of issue 26, it features a cover homaging the iconic Amazing Spider-Man number 121 from 1973. It's the iconic and infamous issue where they kill off Gwen Stacy, Peter Parker's girlfriend at the time. Fun fact, that issue was drawn by John Romita Jr.'s father, John Romita. And now we're seeing Romita, you know, getting a chance to not only pay homage to that cover, but also draw the interiors of a yet another, you know, supposedly iconic and watershed moment. So there's an interesting tie-in there. And they were promoting these two books like as early as April. And it seems that the attitude regarding these issues is that Marvel was kind of expecting some sort of strong backlash. Even the writer of the current series, Zeb Wells, was teasing and hinting at the outrage that he was expecting for these issues. Matter of fact, in April, he told the Popverse in an interview, quote, I can tease that many people will be very mad at me. I can tease that editor Nick Lowe told me not to do any comic conventions after this issue comes out, end quote. It sounds like he was expecting some strong backlash from these issues. And we're talking about a comic series, this current Amazing Spider-Man run, that's already been pretty polarizing for fans and people collecting the series. I've seen conversations in regards to the quality of writing, you know, the quality of the artwork, some of the decisions being made by editorial and things like that. And when you consider that earlier this month, they were already kind of dealing with some backlash in regards to the events of Amazing Spider-Man number 25, which was released, I believe, May 10th, so earlier this month, and it concluded a long, drawn-out plot point involving the status of Peter and Mary Jane's relationship status. And spoiler warning, that didn't go too well. Mary Jane got a new man, and the internets are not happy about it. So tensions and attitudes towards this current run, towards the creative team and editorial, were already pretty high. I don't think things had really gotten a chance to cool off before this leak happened, which brings me to the actual leak and what it's all about. So in the interest of our listeners and just extending a courtesy to anyone listening that doesn't want the events of Amazing Spider-Man number 26 spoiled or ruined for them, or if you're someone that's collecting the series and you have no idea of what's going on, kudos to you. I mean, it's kind of been all over the news. I know Entertainment Weekly has reported on it. Comic Beat, it's all over Twitter. It was all over Reddit. But regardless, if you want to avoid those spoilers, go ahead and pause the episode. Take a look at the timestamps in the show notes. Amazing Spider-Man number 26 does hit shops on May 31st for anyone that's patient enough to wait. Now, for everyone that's still here, let's go ahead and proceed. On Tuesday, May 16th, grainy photos of the last page of Amazing Spider-Man number 26 found their way online via a Reddit post. And of course, you know, that was shared on Twitter and everywhere else. And that got everyone talking and also very upset. It revealed that the story's actual victim was Ms. Marvel, aka Kamala Khan. The page, which is super grainy, shows a, which I think now you can find like a pretty high res version, because Marvel had to do like, you know, had to get on top of it. But at the time, the leak showed a maskless Spider-Man. So Peter Parker holding Kamala in his arms as she takes her last breath. You can't really make out the dialogue or what's being said, but it's obvious that, you know, she's passing away in his arms. Obviously, this sparked some very strong opinions on Twitter and in a bunch of different comic spaces. At least on Twitter alone, Amazing Spider-Man, Ms. Marvel, and Zeb Wells were all trending. Zeb Wells more so for the on the negative. I think he was even getting, like, you know, death threats, and obviously, like, a lot of hateful words were being shared.
Feeling Dan Slott hate?
Whew, I don't know if Dan Slott... You know what? I think Zeb Wells is now... It'd be interesting to look at this in retrospect and figure out if he kind of eclipses. Dan Slott gets a lot of hate for Spider-Man. Zeb Wells, now I think, you know, he's getting a lot of hate for Spider-Man, but also now he's got, you know, the Ms. Marvel army against him as well. And that's a very dedicated fan base. Mm-hmm. Marvel had to do some damage control, and I think they eventually even shared like some solicitations and promotions for future comics centered around the death of Ms. Marvel, but it wasn't enough to, like, you know, basically stop the forest fire that was, you know, this quote-unquote controversy. You guys know as well as I do, my first reaction was, oh, well, it's a major Marvel character dying. This is not going to be permanent. There is a, you know, there's a Marvel's movie coming out in November. You
just
know,
a Disney Plus show.
Yeah, like a really successful one. Iman Vellani, right? Yeah. She's well beloved. I think like that Disney Plus show, even though I hadn't watched it, I saw a lot of positive things about it, you know? Like she's kind of become a beloved character.
Yeah.
You know, Kamala Khan has been a beloved character since her like introduction and first appearance.
I love that character. Like when I think Adam recommended it to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, she's awesome because, you know, there's a reason why she has the Miss Marvel name is because she's a fan of Captain Marvel. And that first arc, the first two or three arcs they're really, really good. And she's a great character that we have like a young person that kind of takes that place or alongside of Miles Morales or to kind of take the place of an aging Peter Parker, that young kid. Responsibility, superhero balance, you know, trying to figure it out while being a teenager for a younger audience.
Marvel basically struck lightning twice in regards to like new legacy characters. Once with Miles Morales, and then they came with it with Kamala Khan, Ms. Mm-hmm. Marvel, right? Like that's what it felt like to me when she debuted. It was like, oh shit, they managed to introduce a new young character and it like stick.
Yeah. But they kept her kind of like in her own world with a few guest stars. So they didn't really push her with like, oh, she's with the Avengers right away. You know, it's like they gave her own world to kind of figure it out. And I think this is, like you said, no one stays dead in comics. And this is going to be, you know, without sounding too cold, this is just going to be a rebrand for the character. They're going to probably make her more similar to the MCU version or, you know, where she's okay. Mutants are okay now. She's not an inhuman anymore. She's going to be a mutant or something, or they're going to just change her slightly. Maybe they'll probably keep the Ms. Marvel name since it's been so established, but they'll probably do a reset on the character is what I'm thinking.
And I think that was shared too. I think that was the general consensus, right? Like chances of her staying dead are slim to none. They're probably using this to better align her to the MCU version of Ms. Marvel. I think there's like a difference in power set and the origin of their powers. Because I think that was a kind of an understanding among a lot of comic fans, right? Is that like the chances of her staying dead are slim to none. I think the outrage for the most part in this, you know, quote unquote controversy came from fans that felt like the death was even more meaningless.
Mm.
You know, it's a comic book death. It's meaningless off the bat. But it was even more meaningless since Ms. Marvel played a very small supporting role in the series. Some people felt like they only put her in the Spider-Man series just to kill her off, which is kind of like, you know.
It's not even in her own book. It's like
it's trash, right? It's like, what the fuck? You killed Ms. Marvel in a Spider-Man book? That's where a lot of the...
Off-panel? They wouldn't even see it?
That would be terrible. Imagine if that was the page that leaked. Ms. Marvel's dead. It's like some, you know, NPC.
Don't even see it.
In the comic, yeah. We joke, but if they wanted her death to have any meaning, to be felt like it was a big deal, it wouldn't have been in some random numbered issue of Spider. It wasn't even issue like, you know, it wasn't like a issue 50 or issue 100. It was like issue 26. You know, overall, I think a lot of people and fans felt like she was being treated like fodder just to advance Peter's story when she's, you know, worthy of standing on her own. She's worthy of going out like so many other, you know, Marvel heroes that have died in the comics, you know, whether it be, you know, in a major event or at least in her own series. And then, you know, when you really start drilling down, I thought there was some interesting perspective being shared in regards to, you know, when you have so few positive representations of like Muslim characters, you know, it makes sense that fans want to hold on to the few that you do have, right? You know, I think she's like probably the most popular Muslim superhero in comics, period, but especially for Marvel. And when you've only got so few, you know, I think it means so much more when they kill her off in this way, right?
Like it should mean more. It should have more.
It should mean more. I agree. Yeah. There should be more gravitas to it. Yeah. And I think the hope is that the publisher would have understood like what she means and the weight of her representation and what she means to fans and, you know, treat them somewhat of like some sort of dignity. I know that's like a pipe dream, but I think that was like the dream. I think that's what rubbed people off. Greg, what are some of your thoughts on this, man? What do you think when you hear this news?
It was definitely sad to see from a couple aspects. I mean the whole initiative of like that line building from number one was to kind of build off of what happened last, and then that whole rift between MJ and Peter and the time traveling stuff. And it just, like I said, I mean, it really felt shoot in at the end after like this big event of the first 25 issues being geared towards like what happened to Peter and MJ, and then all of a sudden like 26 is death of Ms. Marvel. Like it just really didn't feel right story-wise for Amazing Spider-Man and then for the character of Kamala Khan. And then secondly, I've seen shops complaining too, because Marvel did try to like let shops know ahead of time, like, hey, something big's going to happen, you might want to order more, but they weren't willing to willing to share it, and then it kind of came out, you know, and then stuff like that. So shops aren't necessarily excited about the second print compared to being able to order more of the first print and stuff like that. So I think there was some retailers on that side of two that were just not necessarily happy with how things were kind of ran with that issue.
Interesting. See, that's the type of insight we can get only from an industry insider like Greg. Well said. I hadn't even thought about it from the retail side. And you bring up a good point. Just a few weeks prior with the release of Amazing Spider-Man 25, that also was like another big kind of sparked the conversation about like the quality of writing going on in the book and people questioning, you know, I feel like the Spider-Man and MJ conversation always brought up, like, should they be together? Should they be separate? You know, why are they teasing us? I know to Greg's point, for 25 issues, that was kind of like the question that, you know, they were going to try to answer. You know, spoiler warning, that is not the case. They decided to keep them separate. And that the reaction to that issue hadn't even really cooled off before this, you know, came out. So it's been one hell of a time for Zeb Wells, the creative team over at Spider-Man, and just fans of that series. I'm not reading it personally, so I can't, like, you know, comment on the quality. I'm just kind of reporting on what I've seen in regards to the topics and conversation being had around the series. But there's not a lot of people happy with Zeb Wells at the moment. And you can read it for yourself and form your own opinion. Amazing Spider-Man number 26, like I said, lands in comic shops and digitally on Wednesday, May 31st. And then they also have already announced a special issue called Fallen Friend, The Death of Ms. Marvel, which comes out July 2nd. That was announced by Marvel, I think, because they just had to, you know, it was being talked about, it was trending. So they, you know, had to kind of get ahead of it. So they announced this Fallen Friend, the Death of Ms. Marvel issue, which comes out July 12th. Even that got critiqued because it doesn't really feel about Ms. Marvel. Like, Spider-Man's at the center of it. You know, there's characters on the cover that Ms. Marvel's never really interacted with. So people just feel like, you know, they're seeing, I think that, you know, some people are finally kind of seeing Death in big two comics at that for what they are, right? Just like kind of sometimes, you know, a fucking cash grab. A cash grab, and I think in Marvel's case, maybe even a possible setup and promotion to get people talking about Ms. Marvel, maybe even seeing the movies, right? Yeah, that was it was a hell of a time to be on Twitter, comic Twitter this week. All right, last but not least, I have one more topic I want to recap and talk about before we go into our next segment, and this topic relates to the submission process when it comes to, you know, working with a comic publisher. And I think it's a topic that we haven't really talked about before. The headline for this news piece is, "Does the new Gold Key Comics really ask for 200-page submissions?" It comes from comicbeat.com. Just some context around this. Gold Key Comics is the iconic publisher of TV and movie tie-in comics, especially in the 60s and 70s when they, they reigned supreme. They have recently announced their return with the launch of a Kickstarter. So to kind of go back, that seems to be kind of like the recurring theme for all these stories. It's just the rise of independent projects and Kickstarter. In this case, a publisher using Kickstarter to reboot one of their most popular legacy titles. In this case, Gold Key Comics is rebooting Boris Karloff's Gold Key Mysteries, which, like I said, is one of their most popular legacy titles. This particular project will feature works from the creators, including Michael Conrad, Steve Orlando, and there's a few other names attached to this. It looks like it's going to be like an anthology comic that they got funded. But in addition to, you know, a successful Kickstarter, you know, coming back into the world of publishing, Gold Key has also opened up submissions to take in new work. And their guidelines for submitting work was shared online, which kind of got, you know, elicited a response from a few people, especially folks working in comics. I'm going to read some of the submission. First of all, they start off by saying, "Gold Key respect creators in their work. Submission should have at least 6 issues, which is around 200 comic pages, completed. Not have been previously published unless digital, small press, and you own the rights. You have to have a full creative team in place. You have to be open to edits from Gold Key. You have to maintain a pace of 1 issue, so around 32 pages. I always thought it was 22 pages for comics, but they're asking for a pace of 32 pages per month.
Wow.
And then you have to be open to a long-term relationship. Gold Key, some of that stuff doesn't sound you know, out the norm, but I think a lot of people honed in on the 200 pages already completed, the full creative team in place, and then edits. And then further along in the submission, they also have a questionnaire in regards to project submissions. They ask, do you have at least 6 issues developed? Do you have a creative team established? Basically kind of, you know, referencing the bullet points I mentioned earlier. But the response from people online, and like I said, primarily people who already work in the industry, a lot of independent publishers, a lot of people that have worked for other publishers as well. The overwhelming response was that it was a little outrageous for some of the things that Gold Key was asking. To have your own creative team already assembled, for starters, all right? Like, you're saying I need to have, like, my own, like, a writer, an artist, you know, all, like,
why do I need you
team.
Guys?
That's beating me to the point, but yeah, essentially that. Then, you know, to also to come to them with 6 issues, 200 pages of comics already done. Okay, so I'm giving you the finished product in total. And then to be open to edits to the existing work, which means that which could be, like, more tedious rework for you and your team. Like, if you're telling me that, like, you know, I've got to edit something, you know, in issue 3, well, what if that has impacts to issues 1 and 2 or, yeah, you know, tie, you know what I'm saying?
If, like, it's fully done, then that's harder to change.
Exactly. Especially if it's like a pivotal, like, story plot point or something like that. You know, it's just, it's kind of crazy to ask that. To Gold Key's credit, though, they did walk back the submissions, and I think they said, you know, it was an outdated guideline. Obviously, they're in the middle of, like, coming back into the publishing side. They're going to revamp the website and update the submission process. But I thought it was just an interesting look at, you know, the submission process, period. I don't know if I've ever seen anything from Marvel, DC. I've heard stories about, like, the submissions and, you know, how to approach those. But to see detailed submission guidelines like this, to Ed, your point, why would you go to an independent publisher?
Like, it,
right?
Seems like I got things handled. Yeah. I mean, I need to get to you.
I just need you to print it.
You know,
I
don't got a printer. Print it?
I don't got a printer at home.
So I'm going to join you so you can change my story, my finished story, and I got to sign a long-term contract?
I guess that's why it was interesting to see the responses from other people that have actually done the submission process, that this seemed a little crazy and a little out there.
I think I read something, a Jim Lee said, like a submission to DC was like maybe 4 or 5 drawn pages just so you can tell a story.
We've had hundreds of artists on the show, and I feel like the common advice they give when it comes to submissions is usually either make your own comic so they can see that, you know, you're capable of creating your own comic, one that you own. I don't think they've ever said anything as far as like 6 issues, 200 pages, but, you know, even having like a one shot,
a full trade paperback, just hand it to them. Hey, you like this? You gonna hire me now? I got a inker, writer. You don't need to find me any of these people.
You need to come, like, you got to be George R. R. Martin.
They're trying to staff their company too. Yeah. With this submission.
But Greg, as our man on the inside, an industry correspondent.
Does Boom require 200 pages?
Yeah. What does Boom require, Ed? I'm sorry. What does Boom require, Greg?
So I'm not 100% sure on what they require. A lot of that, I mean, just a lot of titles we do, we're pretty curated. So I know with like Mosley landing this year, like that was something where like Bryce, one of our editors, one of the higher up editors, like just calls Rob Guillory about once a year and is like, hey, do you want to do something with us? And like that year, Rob was like, oh yeah, I have an idea. Let's go forward. You know, where like Cullen Bunn is doing Ghost Lore with us right now and had Basilisk before. So it's kind of like, I think a lot of ours just come back with creators we've worked with and occasionally we get a new one in the door. But yeah, we do have like an acquisitions editor that hears pitches and stuff like that, but I'm not too sure on, it's definitely not this. Maybe this is their 60s requirements for Gold Key before they shut down and came back.
They said outdated. It's like, when was this the date? Yeah. When was this outdated from?
Which would be even fucking crazier.
Yeah. Back in the 60s.
Well, I guess let's be real, Ed. You know, if we're talking about the historically bad treatment of, you know, artists and creatives, I guess this would be in line.
Yeah, that is true.
But it is fucking wild to think they were asking for this in the 60s, 70s.
So the guy who drew Turok, Dinosaur Hunter, had all that shit drawn out, ready to go.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, obviously it sounds like an error on their part, something outdated, old, but I guess it still raises
like
the question
200
of like,
pages I can kind of see as a writing submission. But that even seems like a lot. But the fact that they have like creative team and all the other, it's not like they just cut and pasted that from somebody.
If you have all of these submissions, you might as well just go to Kickstarter and do it on your own. You know, and then wait for massive publishing to pick your shit up.
Whatnot will pick you up.
Yeah, it was interesting. This one was, obviously this one wasn't like some major, you know, conversation and people sharing their opinions like the Kamala Khan or maybe the Frank Miller one. This one was interesting to me in regards to some a sneak peek into the submission process, which, you know, we all know varies from publisher to publisher. But with this one being kind of a niche publisher, right, like they are very specialized in, you know, their brand and what they put out.
So they're basically saying we want unsigned talent that has a full trade's worth of books and creative team ready to go. That, but we want full editorial control, and you need to sign a long term deal. That's not really creator friendly. That's a
and we're only going to pay and sign you. All right, you got to figure out how you gonna pay.
Yeah, you got to pay
team.
Your guys. You know, we're not paying for everybody.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild.
I don't know.
I'm curious to see what the updated guidelines are. I wonder if like this was on purpose. Like, all right, clearly they didn't like the 200 pages, guys. Cut that shit in half.
It does seem weird, especially with where we're at now with creators moving to Substack, Patreon, everything else to self-publish, that you would try to put these hurdles up in that regard when you're trying to maybe bring creators back to a publishing arm and not self-publish themselves. So it does seem weird that hurdle was put in place to do that.
They're really weeding out a lot of applicants, though, that's for sure.
All right, that was the last headline we'll be talking about today. I hope everyone enjoyed our recap of this month's major comic headlines. Chime into the conversation if we missed anything, all right? Obviously, we can't get to every single piece of news and headlines, and there was a lot from this month alone. Those were just some of our favorite ones, the ones that stuck out to us. Regardless, it's a perfect time to shift gears into our next topic and look to the future of comics overall and see what new titles will be hitting shops next month. Let's go and grab a fistful of comics.
Either have a mouthful of tea or a fistful of comics.
Fistful of Comics is a segment dedicated to helping all you comic curious newbies and loyal Wednesday warriors find the best new comics, find the best starting points, and creative teams that you can't afford to miss out on. And to help us accomplish that, we've called on our friend Ben Kingsbury, owner of Jacksonville's premier comic shop, Gotham City Limit. He's personally going to give us his top three comic picks of the week. So let's get some music going and let's kick things off. So I feel like Ben's got a sixth sense for comics and this show in particular. I swear to God, I did not tell him what we'd be talking about. I didn't tell him who was going to be on the show. I was like, Ben, I need your picks for this week. So we had no idea of like what was going to, you know, be discussed on this episode. We somehow managed to pick very topical and related comics for this week. And right out the gate, I think it's a perfect example of his like just keen sense of short box and comic books. Let's kick things off with his first pick of the week like this.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, short box listener. I'm Ben Kay, representing Gotham City Limit in Jacksonville, Florida, and these are my three final order cutoff comics you should add to your pull list ASAP. First up, Boom Studios presents Wild's End, number one of six-part series. Embark on this extraordinary adventure that transports you to an alien-occupied interwar England. Join a unique crew of characters as they navigate the perils of a world turned upside down. Their once idyllic seaside home now under the control of an extraterrestrial invader sect. Remember, short box listeners, the truth is out there.
I nominate Ben to be the host of the next Reading Rainbow iteration. He read that whole solicitation perfectly.
Bum, bum, all right. Bum.
All right, that was Wild's End, number one of six. That comes out June 21st. It's being published by Boom Studios. And that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Ben didn't know Greg was going to be on the show. Yeah. Ben didn't know about Greg's ties to Boom Studios. And his first pick of the week is a new Boom Studios number one. The dude's the short box whisperer, I'm telling you. All right, next up on Ben's list. If you thought that first pick was a fluke, here's comic pick number two for you.
Next up, Frank Miller presents Svengoolie, Lost in Time, number one of a two-part series. Strap on your horror-loving hats and get ready for the most spooktacular comic adventure of the century. In this epic saga, Svengoolie himself takes center stage as he battles his evil doppelganger, the diabolical Svenbot, in a time-traveling showdown that'll leave you screaming for more. Svengoolie's first full-length comic book debut is a must-have for fans of the delightfully weird. So grab a copy at your local comic shop, but remember, no personal checks allowed. Svengoolie doesn't take funny money.
Svengoolie is a funny-ass word to say.
It's funny because he's been a long time, I'm not sure what station, but he's one of... from a lost line of like horror hosts, basically like Elvira, what she did before she got big, basically like someone from a news station would dress up at night and then basically, oh, tonight we're going to watch whatever, you know, movies they had rights to, like old horror movies or B movies. Like I said, he's been around forever. I think he's a Midwest guy, but I'm not sure, but he's a real guy. He's a real guy that's basically done this kind of character forever. Kind of, like I said, it's not to the level of Elvira, of course, but he's kind of in that vein where he's like a TV show host, like a almost like a Joe Bob Briggs, but a character. But yeah, it's cool he's getting the comic. Frank Miller must be a fan of that guy.
Ben somehow knew the Boom connection.
Frank Miller.
Somehow knew the Frank Miller connection. They've got cameras in here? I got to double check. I got to sweep this place for cameras. All right, once again, that was Svengoolie, Lost in Time, number one, that comes out June 7th. And last but not least, all right, the last comic pick on this list comes from another non-Big Two publisher doing exciting things. I think that overall that's been today's theme. Well, not really. I guess we did talk Marvel and DC. But today's theme for this Fistful of Comics segment is, you know, independent publishers doing kick-ass things.
Indie comic sensation Jim Lee.
Yeah. Here's comic pick number three for you.
And last but not least, Source Point Press presents Murder by Mail number one. Step into the shoes of a skilled private investigator in Murder by Mail, the thrilling interactive role-playing experience. As a member of Illicit Investigations, you'll immerse yourself in the dark and mysterious world of Cleaver County, tasked with solving a series of murders. With every page, you'll gather evidence, interview suspects, and unravel the twisted web of secrets. Get ready for an immersive, heart-pounding experience where you become the detective in this gripping murder mystery. Another week is come and gone, and I'm still Ben K, representing Gotham City Limit in Jacksonville, Florida. Remember, with great power comes great responsibility, and always take it to the limit.
There we go. All right, once again, that was Murder by Mail, number one, that comes out June 7th as well. Gentlemen, of the three options presented today, which one are you most interested in? Which one are you adding to your poll list? Greg, how about you kick us off, man?
I mean, I have to choose Wild Then just because
it's company man. I respect that.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, whenever I got into comics, I'm going to be like, you know, Dan Didio was my hero at the time. Like, I have to be the cheerleader there. So Wild End all the way. It's one. It's Dan Abnett, too. Like, I mean, one of the greatest writers of all time. Legion of Superheroes run was awesome. Hypernaturals at Boom was awesome. But if I can't choose a Boom, then I love Garrett Gunn and Source Point Press. So the Murder by Mail would be my other one there just because of how awesome Source Point Press is.
You can pick two.
I appreciate it.
I'm going to go ahead and echo your choice, though, with Wild's End. And not because I'm hoping for maybe a potential Boom Studios sponsorship deal, but mainly because it's...
I'll talk.
Greg, I'll let me afterwards. remember that promise you made me? Wild's End, number one, looks exciting. To your credit, it's Dan Abnett, who can do no wrong in my eyes. He's a great writer. And I feel like anthropomorphic-centered comic books have been on fire lately. Like, I'm thinking of, like, Animal Castle. You guys have heard of that title? That shit is amazing. and I've been recently, like, reading Black Sad. So I'm all on board for this, like, anthropomorphic led, you know, centered comic books, all right? Hashtag no furries, though, all right? But Wild's End number one gets my pick. Ed, what about you, man?
The Svengoolie one seemed interesting, but honestly haven't been too impressed with most of the Frank Miller Presents titles, besides Ronin 2, and that's for the art, because the story is, I have no idea what's going on in that book, but it's beautiful. So I'm going to choose Murder by Mail, just because the concept seems interesting. I want to see how they pull off an interactive comic, so it's kind of interesting to kind of want to see what that means exactly. And Source Point Press has been putting out some very interesting stuff.
You know how that comic Murder My Mail is going to be interactive? They're going to mail you. That's a little extreme. I was going to say they're going to mail you a cold case that they've been trying to solve and be like, get to work on this one right here.
Nice.
All right. Just in recap, we've got Wild's End number one, Svengoolie Lost in Time number one, and Murder by Mail number one. I'll have those listed out in the show notes with some hyperlinks if you want to take a further look. If any of those pique your interest, hit up your local comic shop and get your pre-orders in right now. Big shout out to Ben for the list. And remember, even if you don't live in Jax, you can still take it to the limit. You can shop for comics, collectibles, and exclusive variant covers by going to GothamCityLimit.com. And that pretty much wraps up this segment. Greg, I want to go ahead and say thank you so much for the assistance today. You've been great. I'm super proud of what you're doing with Boom Studios and your whole career on comics, man. It's been hella inspiring. Before we officially say goodbye, though, would you like to plug anything you got going on? Any projects you're working on for Boom, et cetera, et cetera?
I just finished up the San Diego Comic-Con, like all the books we're going to have there for. That was kind of like the big thing the past few months. But no, check out Wild's End and then also support Short Box on the Patreon. I know I've been doing it for a while. I think it fell off at one point when I left Jacksonville and like I switched banks and I had to like change some stuff up. But yeah, I mean, the Patreon's awesome. It helps the podcast and there's extra cool material there that you get to listen to. So always, always make your Short Box.
I didn't even have to pay him to say that.
I know. Man.
I didn't even have to pay him to say that. Oh, man. I mean, come on, guys. Stand-up guy right here, guys. Greg was kind enough to donate one hell of a fucking care package of great Boom Studio comics. I mean, I've got exclusive variants. I've got, like, I got some Berserk, like a whole set of Berserker comics. I've got a bunch of Slaughterhouse and Something is Killing the Children. We're going to be doing a giveaway for that. And I'm announced that contest right after this music.
Just
break.
Since you're with the company, Something is Killing the Children is fantastic. It's been one of my favorites, recent favorites.
It's good to hear. No, it's an amazing book.
Something is Killing the Children is a fire series. That is a good book, and I need to get caught up now that I think about it. And maybe one or two of our listeners can experience the series themselves, as well as a bunch of other great Boom titles, if they win this giveaway, which I'll announce after the music break. So let's go do that right now. Let's hear what our guy Delectable Beats has cooked up for us today, and we'll be right back to announce that giveaway and continue the show. Stay tuned. Back. The music you just heard was produced by the newest member of the Shortbox music team, Delectable Beats. If you enjoy or you want more boom bap and chop soul style beats in your life, do yourselves a favor. Check out Delectable Beats on SoundCloud, which I do have linked in the show notes. He just dropped a new beat tape not too long ago. So, good timing. Go support good music. Before we get into our next segment, I mentioned the giveaway right before music break. Let's talk about that giveaway. Like I said earlier, Greg, he's a stand-up guy, and he donated a bunch of awesome Boom Studio comics. There's some variant covers in here, as well as some other exclusives I've never seen before. They all come from Boom Studios. He sent them to me to share with the Shortbox Nation, and I won't lie. My first reaction, my better judgment, is telling me to keep these for myself. But our emails have been looking a little dry lately, and we need content for this segment. And I love hearing from the listeners. I love hearing what you guys are reading, what you're watching. I usually get some good recommendations from people that write in. So let's give away some comics to entice some more emails. And let's hook someone up with a Boom Studios care package. Maybe we'll do one or two winners, depending on the responses we get. So listen up, because I'm going to keep this contest short and sweet. All right, since it is Boom-centric, since, you know, our guy Greg was on the show, all you have to do as a listener is tell us what's your favorite comic series that is being put out by Boom Studios. And matter of fact, it doesn't even have to be current, right? It can be an old title from Boom or something that's recently come to an end. But I want to hear, what's your favorite comic series that's been put out or being put out by Boom Studios? And I've still got a bunch of other exclusive comics too. I've got a variant cover of Murder Road number 1. It's an Oblivion Bar podcast variant by Christian Ward. I've got some Gotham City Limit variants. Let's give away some comics is what I'm saying, all right? So once again, the prompt is, tell us what your favorite comic series put out by Boom Studios. Write us a short response to that prompt and email it to us at theshortboxjacks@gmail.com or hit us up on Instagram. Just let me know it's for the contest that you want your email read in the next episode. And like I said, we'll pick one or two winners to win some free comic books. What's better than that? While you guys brainstorm a good response to that very easy prompt and very easy question, we're going to slide into our final segment and tell you about the best entertainment options outside of comics. It's time for Champion Season.
It's time for Champion Season.
Champion Season is the part of the show where we highlight everything else that has consumed our free time, which include movies, TV series, books, video games, and other entertainment options that we'd personally recommend to friends just like you. Ed... Ed, you always have really good picks, especially after a hiatus. When I haven't seen you for like weeks, you come with like some heat. So what you got a champion today?
Got a couple. So now I'm starting to catch up on my comics. And first one I'm going to recommend is from AWA. It's called Black Tape. It is a basically late 70s LA. It's
Dan Anderson.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's
Panosian. Sorry, his name is Dan Panosian.
Yeah, these names, forgive me, Dan Panosian and Dalibor Talajic is the artist, and Ive Sforcina. I don't know if I've slaughtered those names or not, but that is the creative team. Takes place in 70s LA. A kind of Ozzy Osbourne type rock star has passed away, and his widow is kind of recovering. They were basically kind of met and got married really quick, and he had a sudden death. She finds a list of names and these weird arcane symbols. Found out these are satanic symbols. So
I hate when that happens.
I know. You think you know somebody. So in the late 70s to probably mid 80s or so, there was a thing called Satanic Panic, where a lot of, you know, rock stars and a lot of things kind of embrace this kind of satanic, whether authentic or not, but it caused a lot of uproar. Satan was being blamed, and Satanists were being blamed for all kinds of things in the world. And like I said, so basically it kind of plays off on that as well. So she finds these names, and then the list of names ends up all these women were on this missing persons list. So, and like I said, this is a relationship that they kind of met and fell in love and got married really quick. So she doesn't know how deep this goes with Jack King is kind of the Ozzy Osbourne type character. The first issue, it's like she ends up finding this kind of secret passageway to this almost looks like a torture room with like the pictures of these missing people on the wall. And then she sees a picture of herself, that's kind of the cliffhanger in the first one. So it's a mystery possible, like the black tapes are possibly his recording to open up this portal to hell, to release these demons to hell. It's really almost kind of like a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood type kind of vibe to it. But yeah, definitely recommend that. It's probably on issue 3 or 4. I think came out in February.
Okay.
Beginning of February. So yeah, AWA Black Tape. The second one is pretty jealous. Wild.
I'm like, so
this
Nick Wagner, get ready for this.
This is Death of Power. You gotta look at this. It was on the Cartoonist Kayfabe. They spotlighted it.
Nick Wagner hit me up about this, and as soon as I found it, tried to get it. It was sold out.
Yeah.
My God. It's so nice.
It's like a thick stock paper, really short, but it's basically how Doomsday and Superman fight. It's a rated X version of this fight. So a lot of penises getting ripped off and just real
holy
dirty,
shit.
Real dirty fighting on both combatants' parts. But it is basically like a bootleg Superman Doomsday, the Death of Superman fight, just the fight scene. It's basically, I don't even know if there's any words in this book.
Does that penis have teeth?
Yeah, it's an alien, dude.
What
you don't
the
know.
Fuck
so,
is... right. I maybe saw one or two pages from this book, and I don't think he shared any of the X-rated shit. Yeah, this is crazy.
I saw it on Cartoonist Fave. I did see the message from Nick, and I was like, I had to get it, too. I was like, but it was sold out, but I put my $10 down. It's like, I'm on that next reorder, so came through. Kurt Burdick, I think he sells it through Etsy. So this is a total, like, you know, one man show here. He did everything. It's great material. It's like almost like a card stock, really heavy stock. Like when I got it, I thought there was a backing board with it, but that's just the material of the pages. It's a little bit bigger size, almost like a magazine format. And it is wild. If really gory, vulgar stuff, if you're into that, or if that doesn't bother you, definitely check it out. At least check out the Cartoonist Kayfabe video to get an idea. It is funny. I know there was someone did one with Bane and Batman. Weirdly enough, Bane was naked too for some reason. So I don't know if this is some trend with these bootlegs, but it is full color, well done. It's hard to verbally describe it without getting too gross.
But an audio form podcast does not do this book justice.
It does not do it justice. Definitely check out Death of Power. It is definitely, it says not for kids on the front. That's good. Oh, no, very responsible.
It might not even be for certain adults.
It's not for it's not for most people. Yeah, it's wild. It's highly recommended.
Ed, you did not disappoint. All right. I've got two or three quick ones, right? I'm gonna try to keep this very quick. So first and foremost, my first champion is the graphic novel adaptation of Slaughterhouse-Five. I've never read the original novel. I know that there's some people that are gasping. They expect better from me. I agree. I agree. But I've been reading the graphic novel adaptation.
You waited till the comic came out.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. Yeah. I want pictures of my words, damn it. But it's available to read for free on Comixology. I think the Comixology Plus, if you got one of those accounts, it's free. It is the first ever graphic novel adaptation of Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five, which obviously, you know, considered an American classic, it's one of the world's greatest anti-war books. It is reinterpreted by Eisner Award-winning writer Ryan North, who has written How to Invent Everything, A Survival Guide for the Stranded Time Traveler. And it is drawn and illustrated by Eisner Award-nominated artist Albert Montes, who's credited for drawing a book called Universe. I haven't read that, but I'm in love with his art. It's illustrated so well. And I can't recommend it enough. If you've never read this book or this classic and you want to digest it in a visual form, in a comic book form, I think it'd be well worth your time to check out the graphic novel adaptation. it is awesome. And if anything, it kind of inspires me to go just read the book as well, so I can kind of catch the differences. But the art in this is so, so, so good. And I want to say Ashley might have championed this when it first came out,
right? She did. Yep.
She did? Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm on par with my usual, I'm, you know, 2 years behind, you know, Ashley's picks, because she picks the best stuff ever. All right. Second thing I'm going to champion, and I mentioned this a little bit in last week's episode of Troy, but I want to champion the Bebop Bounty Big Band. Oh. They are a 14-piece jazz
ensemble.
They just
played here, right?
Dude, it was so epic. I know that they've come to Jax a few times. I think they're based out of Orlando, if I'm not mistaken. And they tour primarily Florida, because they got another show coming up September 15th at Sanford, Florida. If you're in the area, heads up, heads up. But I caught them last week at Underbelly. Had such a good time. For anyone that doesn't know, like I was saying, it is a 14-piece jazz ensemble that performs music from the classic anime, Cowboy Bebop, along to accompanying scenes on a big screen. So they'll play like certain scenes from the show. This was worth the price of admission. It really felt like an immersive experience with the video element and obviously like the live music element. If you're a fan of Cowboy Bebop or like live music experiences, highly recommend trying to catch these guys if they, you know, if they're in a town near you. Once again, that is the Bebop Bounty Big Band, and they got a show in Sanford, Florida in September. If you're in the area, or even like, you know, up to make a little drive or day out of it, it's well worth it. And last but not least, you know, I've been on my manga kick lately. I have been reading Vinland Saga, which is a Japanese historical manga series written and illustrated by Makoto Yukimura. It is 26 volumes. It is it tells a story, and it begins in Dane-controlled England at the start of the 11th century, and it tells the combined and dramatized story of King Canute the Great's historical rise to power, as well as a revenge plot centered on the historical explorer Thorfinn, who is the son of a murdered ex-warrior who now serves under the group of mercenaries responsible for killing his father. So it's a revenge story. It's a historical story as well, based on some real shit in regards to like Viking history and you know, English history. The art is amazing. It is like breathtaking how well the line work in this manga is. The historical element to it also, you know, I think elevates it as well, because, you know, you're telling stories about some real shit that's happened, you know, obviously in a dramatized way, but there's that component to it. And it's really easy to get into. It's like 26 volumes. You don't need to be a history buff to, like, you know, wrap your head around what's going on. It's fun. It's kind of violent, but it's definitely cool. There's an anime to it as well. I haven't watched it, but I understand that it's only 24 episodes, and it was called one of the best anime series of 2019. So if you're into, like, you know, Thor or Vikings or history, or you want to dive into new manga, check out Vinland Saga. Once again, my champions were graphic novel adaptation of Slaughterhouse-Five, Bebop Bounty Big Band, and Vinland Saga. I don't know how those stack up against this Death of Power zine that Ed championed. Mine are worth checking out, all right? In a completely different non-alien penis way.
Yes.
Those are my picks for the week. I hope those come in handy for someone looking for anything new to get into. If you are that someone that does try any of the things that we shared today, don't be a stranger. Go ahead and chime into the conversation and let us know what you think. Or if you got a champion or recommendation that you feel that we and the rest of the Shortbox Nation might enjoy, go ahead and share the wealth, man. Tell us, put us on to some new game. We'd love to hear from you guys. Hit us up on Instagram, Twitter, or email. Besides that, that's pretty much our show for today. Ed, it has been great to have you back on, man.
Good to be back.
Killed it. You were fantastic. Do you got any parting words of wisdom, or anything of the likes that you'd want to share?
No, definitely need to keep in touch with Greg.
He's doing big things, man.
No. Outside of writing and drawing a comic, he's done pretty much everything else he can do.
Right? Retail side, convention side, artist shop, convention hustle. Yeah, he's done it all, man. I'm really proud of what he's doing.
I guess more or less like a liaison from the retail to, and he has that experience. So that makes sense.
It's like the perfect role for him, like someone that genuinely cares about the wealth and well-being of our comic retailers. Yeah, I'm really proud of him. All right, well, there you have it, Shortbox Nation. Thank you for hanging out, but that's all I got for you today. It's time to wrap up the show. If you enjoy this episode, the only thing I'll ask is that you help us spread the word. Share this episode with a friend or someone you know that loves comics as much as we do. And if you're feeling extra generous and if you got like 10 seconds to spare, feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us a couple of nice words so everyone else that might come across the show knows that this show is worthy of their time and attention. We appreciate that. Next week, I got another interview for you, all right? And this time, I'll be joined by David Harper, who is the host of the Off Panel Podcast, one of the longest running comic book podcasts out there, a really phenomenal podcast at that. It's an interview show, and somehow he's managed to get interview every episode. He's talked to everyone under the sun when it comes to the comic industry, and I'm excited to pick his brain about the podcast, about what he's learned through his years of podcasting and talking with comic professionals. That'll be next Wednesday, so make sure you come back to this feed. And if you want more content from us in the meantime, head over to our Patreon community. If you want bonus episodes, access to all of the content that we do before anyone else, as well as episode voting and invites to events like our private watch party for Across the Spider-Verse, primarily if you live in Jax. Even if you don't, you get a bunch of awesome perks when you join our Patreon community. You can do so at patreon.com/theshortbox. I would recommend joining our Shortbox Elite tier. That's our most popular tier, and for good reasons. You get a lot in exchange for a measly $5 a month. All right, it's very affordable to support what we got going on, and we'd appreciate it. In the meantime, take care of yourselves, go read your comic books, and continue to make mine and yours Shortbox. We'll talk to you next week. Peace.